So as we were just sitting here, I got an email pop up on my phone. So I do, you guys know that I do like the YouTube stuff, which is really embarrassing to say out loud.
I like how you just call it
YouTube. You do the YouTube stuff.
I do the YouTube stuff, and I have an email like associated with my channel, whatever. And I get some of the most disturbing random emails, but there's this new person, and I don't know if somebody's doing it as a joke or if it is genuinely somebody that might, I don't know, be a little bit lonely. But the email address, I'm not going to say all of it, but it includes Atlanta fan, like, ooh, number one fan, like Atlanta number, they've made an email address. So that's what makes me think that maybe it is somebody who thinks it's funny. But they've sent a couple now, and I'm not sure if it's poems. One line, I mean, it says, "Hello, irresistible Alana," hyphen. And just imagine all these words are, the first letter is capitalized.
The first letter?
Yeah.
That's a lot of admin.
It's like a title. "Hello, irresistible Alana," hyphen. "Lighthearted and never neglecting ambition," hyphen. "How outstanding. When I sleep, I," hyphen, "tenderly grasping out," and then it goes on to some weird stuff, but, so that's just my Wednesday evening.
That's horrific.
What's with the hyphens?
I'm not sure.
It's,
the hyphens and the capitalization is almost more upsetting than getting an email from somebody's email account that says Atlanta fan.
I like your grammar is more upsetting than the content of your emails. Hyphen than the content of your email. That's horrible. Do you get a lot of weird ones like that?
Those ones actually aren't so bad. There are a couple that are wildly offensive. And so what I usually end up doing is I have a Discord like chat room for... Mm-hmm. I stream video games on Twitch. That's another weird thing to say out loud. I stream video games on Twitch. And we have a chat room. And so when I get really horrific or really mean ones, I screenshot them and I put them into the chat room so people can make fun of them with me because it makes me feel better.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, it's just like this one. I'll just read a really short thing. He says, "Pleased to say the latest video is much less irritating due to the general lack of waffle. The let's go and hand gesture," is what I do in all the videos just to like tie them together. So he says, "The let's go and hand gesture is still totally irritating as it is totally meaningless." And then he goes on for about 9 paragraphs to tell me what's wrong with my videos. So I hope you guys are having a great Wednesday. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Murder Friends, the podcast where three friends from three different countries talk about murder. My name's Alana, and I'm Canadian.
I'm Anna, and I'm American.
My name's Hannah, and I'm British.
So sit back and relax. You're among friends, and let's talk murder.
So, I mean, since we're revealing quite embarrassing things, yeah, maybe that we do or don't do, I don't know.
Or receive, I think was... receiving.
This is like embarrassing thing. Hour.
Embarrassing hour. So, okay. I've got Twitter, but I literally have like 16 followers because I don't tweet, or I didn't tweet. And, you know, I just go on there and usually it's like all politics and I read a few things and get really annoyed and then get off Twitter and that's about it. Or sometimes there's like funny, you know, the odd funny thing. But like, you know, when you're just like thinking, oh, well, maybe I'll start tweeting. I don't know. Maybe people want to know what I have to say.
Of course.
I don't know. Maybe they do. Yeah. So the other day I'm like looking and I'm like, fine, okay, I'm gonna tweet about something. And I was like, what do I tweet about? Okay, I don't know. I'm not going to tweet about politics because that's just like, no. Like thinking. And then I was like, okay, well, what's happened to me today? Maybe I'll just like say day in the life stuff. I don't know. Maybe I'll put the occasional tweet out there. So I was like, okay, what happened to me? Well, I was really irrationally annoyed at the gym today because... There was a, okay, do you guys remember those shoes from like years ago? And they were like, they look like little frog feet, and they would wear them at the gym, and they're like, their little toes.
Yes. And they, yes, you know. I do not, I don't approve.
It begins with a V. It's like those five finger, yeah. Yeah. Like running shoes, yeah.
But see, like, okay, first of all, I haven't seen anyone, that was like a fad or whatever. I don't even know what, you know, however many years ago. I literally haven't seen anyone wear those in God knows how long. So I, that was just like, I couldn't stop staring at them. They were really, and then the other thing that was really bothering me was that he didn't even have his foot all the way in them. He like slid his foot. And you know when people wear their shoes sometimes and they like step on the back and then make them slide? That irrationally just pushes me over the top. So not only had he was wearing these weird frog shoes, he made them into sliders. I was just like, no, no. Again, it's probably just me. And you know when you just have those things that for no reason whatsoever, they just annoy you. Like grown women who wear pigtails. I mean, I apologize to any listener who wears pigtails.
Just literally talking about this today at work. That's unbelievable.
38.
You're like, I'm 38. I can't do this.
Yeah, I'm just like, no. I can't. You know, it's just those like random things. So I was like, fine. Oh yeah, that really bothered me today. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to tweet about that. People want to hear. So the tweet was, are you ready?
Yes.
So lame. Hey, 2010, there's a guy at the gym that's wearing those weird toe shoes you gave us. And then I wrote, #, come get your boy. Anyway, so that was my first experience with Twitter. And then I think I then retweeted something about pumpkin spice lattes. I don't know. I couldn't get any more 35 if I tried. Have you guys come across any good tweets lately?
As I said, I only use Twitter for the Eurovision Song Contest.
Are you the only person?
And I'm not.
Watches?
I'm not sorry about it because it's my favorite time of year. But that's all it was. That's all I use it for. So no.
Yeah, you do live tweet. I remember because you're the only person I really know that watches
yeah.
it. You always I remember your
Eurovision.
Live tweets.
I love it.
That's definitely something unique that North America is just watching from the outside. I feel like we don't really get anything quite like that, the Eurovision Song Contest.
No, we don't.
Like, not even close.
No, we have nothing
I think Europe
like that.
Doesn't really get the Eurovision Song Contest. It's it's absolutely batshit crazy. It's absolutely insane. It really is. It's bananas. But I think that's why I like it so much.
The only time I remember watching it is, you remember when they had, like, the Polish were there and they were in, like, milkmaid outfits and they were, like...
Oh, churning the butter.
Kind of wanking butter things.
It was very sexual.
I don't know.
Do you think you'll get back onto Twitter, or is that your first and last?
We'll see. I mean, probably. I'd probably find something mundane and useless to tweet about.
So this week on True Crime News, I wanted to talk about the Canadian duo who basically launched one of the biggest manhunts in Canada in recent years, at least. I don't know if you guys heard about it. It wasn't on the news too much out here, but it was all over my Facebook.
I did hear about it. I saw something about it. I didn't. You know what I saw about it? I saw the second half of the story, an article about that, about what happened to them. But I hadn't heard about the actual thing that they had done.
Yeah, it's a bit confusing. Basically, so for this, I got some details from The Guardian and CBC News The National. But essentially, there are, or were, rather, two boys, really, boys, who were suspected, I can't say that word, I'm so sorry, suspected of killing three people. And there, as far as I know, no obvious reason or motive. So we have, again, I'm so sorry for the names, Briar Schmeglowski, maybe, he's 18, and Cam McLeod is 19, and they grew up together on Vancouver Island out in British Columbia. For some reason, I keep talking about British Columbia. There's weird stuff happening out there lately. But Briar and Cam worked together at a local Walmart, as we all did. I mean, I worked at Walmart, I think, when I was 19. I've been there. I feel those pains. It's not pleasant. So they get together what their parents thought was going to be this trip to the Yukon for work. They were going to leave Vancouver Island. They were going to go out, have this adventure, go to the Yukon. Originally, the boys were listed as missing people because they basically went off the grid and their parents were like, well, they were on the way to Yukon. We don't know what's gone on. And only later did they actually become suspects for murder. So the story starts with the two boys becoming suspects in the murder of Lucas Fowler, who was 23. He was an Australian living in British Columbia, and a U.S. citizen, Shanae Deese, who's 24 as well, who flew out from her home in North Carolina to join them on join Lucas on this road trip. They were very much in love. They had met on holiday a few years prior. This was like them getting together to go on this holiday together and spend time together. So the boys were actually officially charged with one count of second-degree murder in the case of Leonard Dick, who is a 64-year-old lecturer at the University of British Columbia. His body was found on a highway about 2 kilometers from a burned-out truck and camper that the police believe the teenagers were driving. So at that point, these boys are suspected of killing this couple, and they are officially charged with killing Leonard. And at this point, they flee British Columbia, which is like the farthest west province of Canada. And they cover over 3,000 kilometers coming east.
Jesus, that's a really long way.
So eventually, their burned out remains of a car is found on the Bird Reserve in Fox Lake Cree Nation, which is a whole 3 provinces away. And basically the RCMP, which is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, they just descend on this area. They've got tracker dogs, they've got drones. Like, the area that the boys are suspected of being in is swampy and forest and really in the middle of nowhere, like proper Canadian wilderness. And it's just these 2 18- and 19-year-old boys. So most recently, and it's probably why you would have seen it in the news, Anna, is because both of the bodies of these boys were found in the wilderness. Right now, they're ruling it as suicide, and they say that there were guns nearby that they are getting tested, but you can assume that potentially they might have shot themselves or each other, what have you. But the biggest thing, and the thing that I do not understand, is there is no talk of motive. It's just like these two boys, they're going to go up to the Yukon, they're going to travel, they're going to get new jobs, whatever. And then all of a sudden, this couple traveling are dead, and this man, lecturer, is dead. And now these boys apparently have committed suicide.
Wow.
It's just like...
Well, it's hard. I guess, you know, it's so... With suicide, you just never seem to get answers, do you? I wonder. So they met... Did you say they met years previously?
Yeah, they were actually friends growing up, and I watched, I think it was on the CBC, The National. They talked to some of the people that knew some of the boys, at least that knew Breyer, and they all sort of said that he was a little bit odd, that he was a bit of an outsider, that he gave off kind of weird vibes. And the one thing that they have been talking about a lot of, especially with what's happening in the US now as well, is that both boys played a lot of violent video games. So everybody's saying, ooh, that's why they're playing violent video games. Whether that contributed, maybe, whether that helped like feed some sort of fantasy, maybe. But at this point, nobody's reporting on any type of motive or how these people were connected.
I wonder if it'll come out.
I think it as well, because it is still active investigations, right? And now that the boys are dead, they're going to have to decide how they want to proceed. But they're not really releasing much in terms of details and that sort of stuff.
No. Yeah, you think that maybe they met each other and they were both like quite dark souls. I don't know. Yeah. Like, you know, they had these thoughts already. They met each other and then maybe like... made this plan to go out and do these things and then got caught.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And you think like 18 and 19 is so young. Like when I think of myself, like I was working at Walmart at 19 and I hated it. And I was like in between first year and second year of college. And like, I can't imagine. So right now, at least, the investigation is still ongoing. Hopefully, they will come out and say what happened. But at this point, it is one of the biggest manhunts, thankfully now finished, that Canada had in recent years. And I guess we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Today, this is for solid proof that we don't just sit at home and watch Netflix. We have a book review.
Oh.
Yay.
Yeah. So Chase Darkness With Me is the recently released memoir of sorts by Billy Jensen. The description from Billy's website reads as follows. Journalist Billy Jensen spent 15 years investigating unsolved murders, fighting for the families of victims. Every story he wrote had one thing in common. It didn't have an ending. The killer was still out there. Have either of you read it or listened to it on Audible?
I have listened to about half of it. I haven't quite finished it. I'm like halfway through. So I kind of know some of it. But I also know quite a bit about Billy Jensen. He's quite popular in the true crime. In the last couple of years, he's really
become quite prolific, hasn't he?
Yeah, like quite a big figure. Yeah. Like if you're into it, you probably know who he is.
Cool. So this might contain spoilers for you, Anna, and I'm really sorry if it does.
No, it's okay. You can tell me.
That's fine. So the book chronicles Billy's history as a journalist. It goes through his family, his fascination with true crime, and his frustration with these unsolved cold cases. He does write quite a lot about his relationship with Michelle McNamara in detail, and how invigorating it was for him to connect with someone who was also deeply passionate about true crime, and was equally, if not more, ferocious about catching killers, rapists, and monsters as he was. So if you've read I'll Be Gone in the Dark or know anything about the case, you'll know that Michelle McNamara was trying to catch all of those traits in one person, so the Golden State Killer, or Joseph James DeAngelo, as we know now. The final paragraph of Billy's book is him writing in the present tense about the capture of the Golden State Killer. It's one of those true crime Christmas moments, which we all, as fans of true crime, hope happen.
Yeah, I think when it happened, I think we all like went nuts and texting each other, didn't we?
Yeah, my phone was just like, "Wah!" It blew up.
Yeah, the Golden State Killer was always the scariest one for me. Like, you know how you kind of have like that one or two ones where it just like does something to you, and Golden State was always the one that really freaked me out more than all the other ones.
He was the stuff of nightmares for sure. And I remember when that happened, because I texted you guys. I had my family were visiting from the States, and they were over, and obviously you're kind of like, and it happened, it came through in the news, and I was like, oh my, you know, freaking out. And I'm like trying to like tell my aunt, like, hey, yeah, she's like, what is wrong with you? Like, you don't understand.
So why are you so excited about this? So the events described by Billy, and for someone who's so like massively invested in this case, in my opinion, that chapter is worth buying the book for.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, wow. So because he attends this promotional event for I'll Be Gone in the Dark when they're promoting the book after Michelle's sad passing. And he returns to his hotel rooms and finds out they have him in custody. And he goes through basically the timeline of when he finds out of like the immediate events afterwards. And it's really interesting. Like, it's fascinating.
Oh, that must be. Can you imagine, though, working on something as long as you did and just getting a conclusion?
You think of how many podcasts or books or whatever that we read or listen to where they are never, ever solved. Like, ever.
Yeah, like the Zodiac Killer.
Yeah, have something like that that you've worked on for so long and actually get solved.
That must be crazy for him. But after Michelle McNamara's death, he starts using his own money to pay for targeted advertising on Facebook. And I know we spoke about targeted advertising, but this is different. So he tries to solve crimes essentially he calls it crowd solving. So it's asking people if they could identify someone in a video clip, or if they know someone with a tattoo that looks like this, or if see someone's picture or something like that.
Chase Darkness With Me is my journey from being a true crime journalist who's written stories about unsolved murders, stories with no endings, and becoming so fed up that I wanted to solve these murders myself, and I came up with a system on how to do it. There still are plenty of unanswered questions, and there's a lot of murders that are unsolved, and that's where I want the listener to join with me and try and solve them.
I actually really enjoyed how open he was about the failures he encountered. and how some of the cases he looked at solving were the ones that weren't big or famous. And it gave him kind of a champion of the people kind of vibe, but it also kind of cements himself as like a citizen detective and also a victim's advocate as well, because he did all of these advertising, targeted advertising and everything with the consent of the family, which I think is a great way of doing it.
Yeah.
But it also balances the small cases with some bigger cases as well. So the small cases might not be enough to keep, I wrote the super true crime buffs interested. So he explores the big cases he was working on as well, trying to identify the Allenstown Four, which is also known as the Bear Brook Murders.
Oh, yeah.
So the Bear Brook podcast was brilliant. Have you listened to that one as well?
That is probably the best podcast I've listened to in like the last 3 years, maybe.
True crime wise, oh, absolutely. I agree. I remember that it was so good. And actually, am I remembering correctly? Billy Jensen talks on there at some point, doesn't he?
Does he?
He does. He does actually have an interview in there. He does, yeah. Ooh. I'm sure he does.
Yeah, because there's been a big, there's been like updates on that one as well, hasn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they identify people.
Bear Brook needs its own true crime episode on just by itself. That was a crazy story.
Definitely.
That was really, really good.
So the book concludes with Billy giving you sort of a call to action and a toolkit of sorts for amateur sleuths. So he talks you through how to set up your own targeted ads, and most importantly, rules to do this by. He highlights how sometimes internet detectives get things badly wrong and uses the example of the Boston bombing, which is where unreliable crowdsourced material named innocent people, such as Sunil Tripathi.
Hmm.
And when I was doing the research for this section, I went on a bit of a deep dive when it comes on the topic of citizen detectives and the Boston bombing. There are a lot of, now there are a lot of really good academic journals on it.
Really?
Like psychology journals and like academic journals. It's really interesting, which I'm like a huge personal sucker for. There's also a 2015 documentary feature film called Help Us Find Sunil Tripathi, which I've queued to watch. It's on Amazon. I think it might be a really interesting topic to cover in one of our True Crime 101s, so I have put that on the list.
Sounds great. Nice.
Yeah. So, Anna, what did you think of the book so far?
So, like I said, I haven't listened to the whole thing, and it's absolutely, I think it's fantastic, and I loved it. And I think I just got distracted with something else. I had to, couldn't get back to it, but I still want to finish it, and I'm definitely going to finish it now. It's really interesting. Even the stuff the first part he's talking about his own life and like when he started out as like a journalist and working on a true crime report. I think it was called like the True Crime Report for a smaller newspaper. I thought it was really good. I'm sure you've all heard this, maybe not by name, but about the murder of Raina Marroquin. It was the killer, well, Howard B. Elkin. And I know you've all heard this because it's been on like every true crime show. I think Forensic Files has done a thing on it. I think my Favorite Murder covered it. I think Case File covered it. And basically a chemical drum was found in a house in the 90s. And there was a woman inside of it. And it had basically, the home, it was like in a crawl space or something. And the home had changed owners like, I don't know. Three yes. times? Yes. Yes, okay.
I just watched this on Forensic Files when I was falling asleep the other night.
There you go. Okay. So, it wasn't discovered until 1999, and they were able to sort of go back and, like, trace and find out who she was, and it's a really compelling, interesting story, like, just about the whole thing. It's really sad. Billy actually went and interviewed Howard Elkin. Do you remember that part of the book?
Yeah, doesn't he look back at former owners of the property?
Yes.
And he calls them up and he recounts his telephone call with him, and it's like, fuck,
it's such a big case. And obviously, as you guys know, he ended up committing suicide when the police finally like tracked him down and realized it was him and everything like that. He took his own life, but it was just wild that like him being part of a case that is quite infamous.
Definitely, yeah.
But little things like that, I just find he is very much a victim's advocate. And I remember, obviously not that long ago, they had the two Ted Bundy. Well, the Ted Bundy movie with Zac Efron. Oh, Lord. That movie. And then they had the confession tapes, which I think we all watched confession tapes. And it was almost like, it was very kind of a time where it was like glamorizing Ted Bundy, especially the movie version. And I remember him, he kept tweeting out and Instagramming just all the faces of the victims of Ted Bundy. That was, you know, he was just still, again, putting all that out, wanting everyone to look at their faces, not, you know, because it was, I guess, in the way it was, he was getting all of this media attention on him when really he's just a piece of shit. But that just shows, I think, his whole character as a person and as what he does for a living. And it is quite amazing, the fact that he is so connected to so many, like, very big cases, like, especially the ones that were going, like, the Golden State Killer, the Bear Brook one, you know, all these different ones. So I definitely can't wait to finish it.
Yeah, I feel like his name sort of came out of the blue in the last couple years. Maybe that was just my perspective, but it seemed like I didn't know his name, and then all of a sudden I saw his name everywhere, and I saw how many cases he was involved in some capacity. It's like, how did I not know of this person before?
He really got some notoriety with helping with Michelle McNamara's book, didn't he? And also, I think, as we're all fans of My Favorite Murder, I think he's friends with Karen, I think, maybe? Or I think he knows them. I'm sure they've done so, hearing about him as well. He also has two podcasts, other podcasts that he regularly is on. And I don't know if you guys have listened. The first one is The First Degree, and that's Billy Jensen, Jack Vanek, and Alexis Linkletter. And in that one, what they do is they have a case, they talk about it, and then they find someone who's, like, directly involved with the case, whether it be a family member or a friend of, like, the killer or a family member of the victim. I don't know. They have gotten some quite actually, they had, I want to say they interviewed, you know, Tara from the Dirty John?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had her on there to talk about it directly. And so on. And so anyway, I think he's been going a year or two, and it's actually really good. I've listened to some of the episodes. I quite like it. And then the other one is Jensen and Holes, Murder Squad with Paul Holt.
What a great name.
It is so good. And obviously that's with the very infamous Paul Holt, one of the detectives who helped bring the Golden State Killer to justice.
I quite like, I like Paul Holt on the Murder Squad, but one thing I really dislike is the hashtag hot for holes.
Oh yeah.
It's so cringe.
It is.
It's like the most cringy thing in the world. Yeah. Just a bit.
Well, it's, do you know what? He did that, and in the true crime community, he became a bit of, like, a sex symbol,
which is so strange.
I know, because he's quite hunky looking, you know, I gotta be honest. He's not a bad looking guy.
Yeah, like Silver Fox, yeah.
And I guess as well, in quotes, the true crime community, there aren't a ton of really prominent figures or names. Because a lot of times we talk about cases, you don't necessarily know the name of the investigator or the detectives or who finally solved the case or anything. We just sort of talk in broad strokes and consume information in broad strokes. So with, like, Jensen and Holes, they're two very specific, very well-known names. They don't really have any others.
No.
Or at least not very many.
Yeah, right.
And I never really thought about that before.
You're totally right. Yeah, you're right. They, years and years ago, like, I want to say in, like, the 40s or something, or maybe earlier, maybe a bit later, newspapers really focused in on detectives. They were, like, really well known. It was a thing. And obviously that massively started to fade away over the years. So it is like you just never see that anymore, where you have like a detective or sort of like a crime fighter, if you will.
Yeah.
And like that is very well known.
A face there. Yeah. No, you're right.
So, Hannah, what would you give the book out of 5?
I gave it a 4.5 out of 5.
Oh, dang.
Wow.
I thought it was good. And I'm quite stingy with my rating. So, yeah.
You are very stingy.
I thought it was great. you're very stingy.
Yeah. From what I listened to, I have to agree with you on that. And I'm actually, I think I'm away for a few days. And I'm going to bump that up on my list. To because I got to finish that now that we've discussed it.
Where can you get it? Is this strictly Audible?
It is on Audible. It was just released on Audible first. And then I think in the last couple of weeks, it's come out an actual hardback or paperback or hardback. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it in the bookstore.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Did you guys ever watch the, like, paranormal, like, ghost hunters type shows?
Yeah, there used to be a British one. I can't remember what it was called. It had a vet, a woman called a vet, and Derek Okora on it. Oh, shit, what was it called?
I was just thinking, what if, because we do this over Skype and we can see each other, what if this is like we catch supernatural activity through doing this podcast on Skype? We finally have
it. We have it. Well, Hannah's house is old as shit, so. Actually, mine is too. So. Definitely Hannah's, though.
Yeah, people definitely died in my house.
For sure. Like, somebody's done.
Tuberculosis or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to go with. A good tuberculosis.
Just like an
old-fashioned
disease. Syphilis, probably. Oh, yeah. I've got a good syphilis ghost hanging around.
Syphilis ghost, oh my God.
I thought I can joke about it, but I'm legitimately convinced my house is haunted, so.
You do have those creepy-ass dolls.
Oh, yeah, the dolls are the problem.
Syphilis. Sorry.
I talk about Gloria ghost. That way.
Oh, that's so funny.
Open a sneaker into your house.
No. Oh, God.
One year for my birthday, when I was like 12 or 13, my mom bought me one of those like porcelain dolls that come in like the case, like the hard traveling case and stuff. Because I think she was just at a loss of what to buy me. So she's like, well, I'll just buy her a doll. And I just remember opening it and being like, oh, that's really nice. And then I put it in the case and I put it in the basement and I never brought it back out. Like, I put it in a very specific spot so I knew if it had moved, it moved on its own accord and I didn't move it.
Oh, that is so funny. How old were you? That's like some seriously good thinking.
Yeah, well, you know, 12 and very paranoid.
The paranoia already started. I love it. Love it.
Already on True Crime, she knows about spooky dolls.
Yeah, exactly. Weird Crime Time. Okay, so for this week's Weird Crime Time, I'm going to take you to Sheffield in the UK. And I'm getting this from an article in The Star. Sheffield Star. So not even like the other crappy.
The very well-known Sheffield
Star. Yeah, the Sheffield Star. So,
it's the Guardian of the North. It's yeah. I say the North. I don't even fucking know where Sheffield is.
I don't either. I was going to say, is it? It sounds like a North. It sounds North. I don't know. Okay. So I'm going to read you the headline. And then you can maybe have a guess what it might be about. Stop having sex with my hedge, Sheffield man's desperate plea to drunken louts. Now, is it a hedgehog? Is it some shrubbery? Is it a crime against shrubbery?
Is it like a privet hedge? Like a privet hedge? No, it can't be.
A retired Sheffield art teacher has pleaded with drunken louts pretending to have sex with his hedge. Pensioner Keith Tyson has been carefully trimming the hedge outside his Georgian terraced home into the shape of a tastefully nude lady since 2005.
Oh.
However, the 84-year-old says he has been continually awakened in the early hours of the morning by lowlifes trying to straddle his bush, which he has named Gloria.
Gloria!
Mr. Tyson said he has to make regular repairs in the hedge and is now considering putting up a sign to address the issue. A sign. That's so British.
That's what we do.
Yeah, a polite sign, like.
No.
Three-dimensional metal designer Keith from Sheffield said, "You get drunks, publicly undress, and having fun with her in the middle of the night. I've been awakened many times, mainly by men and sometimes also by women, messing about with her and making a lot of hysterical noises." Now, I'm going to post a picture of this hedge, guys, to our socials, just so you can all have a little look. About 3 weeks ago, I looked out of the window at about 4:30 in the morning and there was a man acting like he was shagging her. It's offensive and appalling and it's damaging her figure. Privets don't respond well to being manipulated like that.
I think the thing that is when you said that they were getting undressed.
That's the whole
and doing it.
Well, like, they're going for it.
It's funny. It's not funny. Well, it is funny. It's funny enough to like jokingly like take a picture pretending that you're doing something for like Snapchat or whatever, but like taking off your clothes and doing that is a little bit more,
that's a lot of effort. But 4:30 in the morning and you've really pissed, but you feel like Sheffield's
peak time,
probably
though.
Really cold.
It's peak time for drunken antics. It's
exactly
4:30 in the morning.
And then you stumble by and you see this like actual lady.
I guess at that point, if you're stumbling home, you're stumbling home alone. if you know what I mean. And you see this beautiful, did you say tastefully nude hedge?
Well, I mean, she's a hedge, so she's made of leaves. I don't know if she's nude. I think she might have some, he like put some stuff on her.
Okay.
What are clothes?
Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna pull up that picture. I'm just going to double check again. Okay. She's not wearing any clothes, but she is wearing a pearl necklace. Like the bead kind, guys. Get your mind out of the gutter, okay? Okay.
I like how you had to clarify that for us. She's like, you animals.
Okay, so former art teacher Keith came up with the idea for Gloria, who he named after a local sex worker. While teaching at the city's former College of Arts and Crafts, Gloria was one of the several ladies of the night. Artist Keith often saw wandering his own Georgian street, nestled right next to Sheffield's busy nightlife.
Oh, so he's close to, like, all the bars and clubs and things.
Yeah, I don't think people, like, there's not, like, a bus tour that goes by his house. Like,
this is right there.
Like, yeah, we could learn a detour. Like, but I think you're just asking for trouble. Come on. Although he admitted he was not deeply acquainted with the real Gloria, who he also named personally, he said, I started by doing a figure of a monster, which was headbutting a lamppost at the end of my garden, and then it developed into this monster defending a maiden. She developed slowly over 2 or 3 years.
Oh, so this Aww. Is like a labor of love. Like, this is
yeah,
a long...
Yeah.
He might be in love with Gloria.
He might be. And then he said...
Hedge Gloria or real Gloria?
I think Hedge Gloria.
Yeah.
Well, he did say, he said, there were 2 incidents in 1 week, and I thought she looked a bit messed about. So I put the beads on her to give her a morale boost.
Yeah, he's in love with this hedge.
He's anthropomorphizing a fucking bush.
Did you guys ever see the movie Lars and the Real Girl?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Ryan Gosling falls in love with a blow-up doll, and he gives her a name and stuff. I feel like this might be getting into that type of territory.
Yes. Well, he did say he did help to design Sheffield train station's impressive cutting-edge sculpture, so there must be, like, a big... I've never been to Sheffield. I don't know. But he's not reported the incident to the police for a fear of reprisals.
Aw, he's protecting her.
I know. So, I don't know. I know that's not, like, a typical... crime, but obviously he's very upset.
Well, if it's damaged personal property,
and it's damaged personal like property,
if someone's damaging Gloria by pretending to bang her, then phone the police. Phone the police. They definitely won't laugh at you.
Maybe next time we've learned from this, put your lady sculptures in your backyard, not the front yard.
Yeah.
When you live next to the like bars. Especially in the UK, because you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah, we're monsters.
Yeah.
Nighttime drunk and louts, that's what we are.
Well, I think that's everything for today. If you want to get in contact with us, feel free to email us at murderfriendspod@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at murderfriendspod, Twitter, murderfriendpd. I promise the tweets will be better there. In my own. And always check out our website, murderfriends.com. And if you like our podcast, please leave us a review and a 5-star rating. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.